Thank you. Be seated. The court is ready to hear oral arguments in Interray Continental Airlines, Continental Express, Legend Airlines, and City of Dallas.
May it please the court, Ms. Elizabeth Whitaker and Mr. Randall Wilson will be responding to the relator. Relators have reserved 10 minutes for rebuttal. Ms. Whitaker will open with the first 15 minutes. Mr. Wilson will present the rebuttal.
Good afternoon. A great deal of ink has been spilled over the years of Texas jurisprudence over the question of venue. Why is that? Because everybody realizes that where the case is tried can be outcome determinative. Stories are legion about being hometown in the wrong venue. Venue is a very important question to the city of Dallas. Dallas is deeply concerned that a Fort Worth court is being asked to impose pervasive controls over who can and who cannot fly out of Dallas, over Dallas's use of its own land and its own airport, and even to require Dallas to close down Love Field.
Counsel, but you have made no claim that you will not get a fair trial in Fort Worth.
The issue of venue relates to the mandatory right to make your choice about, venue is all about the defendant having the choice about going into the reasons why they should be given that choice. It is all founded on giving the defendant without questioning the fairness of the current forum, having the choice nonetheless to switch it somewhere else. But it is also a reality of this and why there's a great deal of concern and urgency to these issues.
But yet you made no allegation with regards to unfairness.
Pardon?
You've made no allegations in any pleading.
That is not a direct issue for this court to determine today. That is correct. Why is venue proper in Dallas? There are many reasons, many of which will not be presented to the court today, but on appeal. But one that is before the court today is the question of mandatory venue, because injunctive relief is being sought. It is Dallas's position that because Fort Worth has sought injunctive relief in the case, that therefore venue is mandatory elsewhere than in Fort Worth. Fort Worth and American both say either that there is no injunctive relief being sought in this case, or that it is merely ancillary and therefore can be disregarded. Their analysis is wrong because they have the wrong rules, and they've mixed up the rules. What are the proper rules in which we can analyze this case? The proper rules are set out in Chapter 15 of the Code, Civil Practice and Remedies Code, specifically Sections 15.001 and 15.004. 15.004 provides that where there are multiple claims, and one of them is a mandatory venue provision, that the suit shall be brought in the county required by mandatory venue provision. That provision derives from a codification in 1985. It was first codified at that time. In 1985, the legislature made explicit what the courts had been developing through the case law up until that time, and that is an explicit hierarchy for choosing venue. The top choice went to mandatory venue, second to regular venue, and third to permissive. And what it explicitly made as part of our statutory law in 1985 was the basic rule that mandatory will trump permissive and regular venue. The only test, however, that they announced in the statute for determining whether you had a mandatory venue versus a regular ancillary was whether or not there were multiple causes of action. The test that they announced in 1985 in the statute was not whether one was ancillary to another or one was dominant to another. Rather, the test, as it's currently in place, is are there multiple claims? If so, is one of them mandatory? If that's the answer, then is mandatory venue transfer. So why is there a discussion in the cases about dominant versus ancillary? If you look at the cases cited by American Fort Worth, they're all pre-1985 cases. Those are old cases under the old fee of privilege scheme, where the court was using the test of dominant versus ancillary as a means of primarily sorting out the choice between two mandatory venue provisions. Thus, in the Jones case, you had two mandatory venue provisions at stake. One was the title of real estate, and the other was an injunction. The court held that because the real estate title question was the more specific mandatory venue provision, and as opposed to the injunctive, which was more general, that in fact the real estate would trump over the other. And basically they used language of dominant versus ancillary. Likewise, in the Carley case, you had a plaintiff seeking an injunction against two defendants, one of whom had the absolute mandatory right to be sued in Travis County as a government agency. Given that that other venue, mandatory venue provision, was so focused and specific, they said that that would be the one that would be dominant to the injunctive relief that was ancillary. There is no case since 1985 that specifically talks about how you sort out two mandatory venue provisions today. It is possible, therefore, that some of the old case law has some limited application or vitality today. But the important thing for this court to recognize is that's not a question needed to answer in this case. Because in this case, we have a clear choice between what is at best a regular venue choice, which is a deck action, and a mandatory choice, which is an injunction. Because Fort Worth and American have mixed up the rules, they spend their brief answering the wrong question. The question they want this court to ask is it a deck action or is it an injunctive action? And they say you can only choose one answer. This is a false choice. It is akin to a car salesman who says he'd like to buy the Buick or the Chevrolet, or would you like to buy today or tomorrow? The savvy customer knows what's going on and says, neither, I've got additional options, and I'm going to choose from all of my options. The question here is, if injunctive relief is at least one claim sought, whether or not there's also debt relief sought, then Dallas must prevail.
And that's true, in your view, whenever it comes in the case. If you are pretty far along in the prosecution of the declaratory judgment case, and suddenly you decide to seek injunctive relief, at that point, then you would be in question.
I think that the likely answer is that that would be so, although I don't think that question is required in this case. Because, and I say that simply because of the clear-cut language of 15.004. But looking at this case, it is clear-cut that there is a request for injunctive relief for two separate reasons. One is, there's clearly a temporary injunction against Continental. The way that Fort Worth and American try to get around that is by saying, oh, that's just ancillary, so we can disregard it. But once again, by going...
Can you piggyback on Continental's venue?
I believe so.
And how can you do that?
Because I believe the venue statute says that where it's statutory venue as to one defendant, that then it is proper as the other defendant. They basically try to write out the temporary injunction as not being a claim within the meaning of the venue statutes, but in so doing, they rely on the old pre-1985 cases. They once again mix up this whole ancillary versus dominant distinction. If you look at the Mikulski case and the K.J. Eastwood case, both of which are cited in the briefs, you also realize that the mere fact that it's a temporary injunction does not mean that it's not worthy of invoking mandatory venue. In the Mikulski case, you had a deck action to construe the terms of the deed of trust. You also had a request for temporary injunction to stop the foreclosure. The court held that it was, in fact, mandatory venue because a temporary injunction had been sought, despite the fact that there was also a deck action sought. Same thing's true in the K.J. Eastwood case. But apart from the temporary injunction that has been sought against Continental, there's also clearly an injunction being sought against Dallas. While this court looks to the plaintiff's pleadings to determine venue, this court is not bound by the labels used by the plaintiff. As Judge Pollitt said, if it walks, talks, and quacks like a duck, it is a duck, even though you protest that it's really a chicken. Labels are not what bind this court. Fort Worth, therefore, cannot say, I am not seeking an injunction. What I am only seeking is a ruling that there's irreparable harm, that there is the need to maintain the status quo, that there is no adequate remedy of law, and that Dallas cannot do X and must be required to do Y, particularly when what they're asking Dallas to do or not do is pervasive regulation of Dallas's conduct. That's the love field for the foregoing ongoing future.
Even if the injunction action claim
were transferred to Harris County or Dallas County or both, the declaratory judgment action could remain in Tarrant County. Is that true?
No, because I would believe that what the courts are saying is where there's multiple claims, the mandatory venue provision would govern, and
well,
it would carry the others along.
The plaintiff could simply non-suit the claim and refile it again in Tarrant County.
The collective deck action?
Yes.
What I am submitting, Your Honor, is that the very heart and soul of their case is injunction. Therefore, no matter how many times we try to cover it by saying it's a deck action, it is an injunctive action. And that becomes apparent as you see how over and over and over they try to get away from calling it a chicken, when in fact that's what it is.
But if they disagree with that, persist in that disagreement, they could refile their declaratory judgment action in Tarrant County. They could find a way to continue to prosecute that there.
I would strongly question whether they could. I'd have to look at how they do that, but so far they have not succeeded. If you look at the request they seek and were to drop it into an order, it absolutely is an injunction. Reading from the relief they request, they pray for this request. Quote, Dallas is prohibited from permitting any scheduled interstate passenger service from Love Field. If that were in an order, that would be an injunction.
You could just as easily put the label that correction of rights for that statement. Could you not?
If the order says
could you
that,
not,
pardon?
Could you not?
In that regard, Your Honor, let me go into the Billings case. Because the deck action, as this court knows, is a very fluid cause of action, and courts have repeatedly had to demonstrate vigilance to keep it within proper bounds. For example, in the Morales case, which was the anti-sodomy case, the plaintiff sought to declare a law unconstitutional. The court said, even though you have a clear uncertainty of the scope of the law, even though you'd very much like to have a declaration of the law, we're going to say that's an advisory opinion. We're going to put that boundary on it. Likewise, when defendants have sought deck actions in response to, say, a car wreck case, in order to try to get attorney's fees, the court has said, no. Even though it is a deck action, we're not going to allow you to have other rules turned on, not going to allow you to use it to turn other rules on their head. And there's a whole variety of those instances in which the court did not allow a deck action to basically turn other rules on their head.
So what about our decision in Leeper? If we were to construe the contract and the joint, or the courts were to construe the contract and the joint bond ordinance and say these are your rights and obligations, doesn't Leeper say that you will be presumed to comply with those rights and obligations unless it's shown otherwise, and then injunctive relief might be appropriate?
First of all, Leeper was not dealing with a temporary injunction case, which is what this is. But secondly, it was not a venue case. The court spent a paragraph dealing with the typical rule of courtesy that applies, for example, in a mandamus case, where out of courtesy to the judge, for example, in mandamus, the court will first conditionally grant the issue the writ, but hold back the actual issuance itself if the judge fails to comply. It was a similar situation where that rule of courtesy was being followed. But had it been a venue case, I submit the mandatory venue provision would apply, because the plaintiff in the Leeper case had sought a permanent injunction. And on a venue question, the court does not get into the merits of whether they should or should not get a permanent injunction. And even in that case, the court ultimately decided that under those particular circumstances, they would not in fact grant that remedy. It does not change the fact that the plaintiff was in fact seeking it. If you were to allow them to plead this case as a deck action, you might as well take a red pen and strike out the mandatory venue provision for injunction, because any plaintiff's lawyer worth their salt can write in such a way that any injunction reads like a deck action, and that's true of virtually any cause of action.
Ms. Whitaker, what if at the end of this action the court entered a judgment that declared the rights and obligations under the bond agreement, and it said, here's how Love Field is to be operated, with no enforcement provision whatsoever? Then at that point in time, if in fact Dallas did not do what the judge said and they brought a subsequent injunction action, isn't that what they're trying to say here, that we're going to give Dallas the chance to do the right thing if, in fact, they lose the lawsuit?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because they have specifically prayed for a declaration that Dallas is prohibited from doing, from permitting flights, and has an obligation to take all lawful action. More importantly, I don't think it turns on whether you have a hard-headed defendant. The rule on whether you have an injunctive action is never turned on whether you have a defendant who's a rogue, as they say, who will flagrantly disregard the court's rulings. And if they could simply say, we're going to presume that we have a good defendant on the other side, and we're going to hold off on permanent injunction, and we're going to say that the temporary injunction is ancillary, then you could never have a mandatory venue provision under the injunctive provision. Any plaintiff's lawyer could write that out of the book. You can't do that, and you can't reasonably construe the law so that that is now meaningless in light of how broad and flexible the deck action pleading rights are.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Is that the entire opening?
I have 10 minutes for rebuttal.
Court is ready to hear arguments from respondents.
May it please the court.
May it please the court. Mr. D. Kelly and Mr. Michael Powell will present arguments for the respondents, real parties in interest. Mr. Kelly will open with the first 12 minutes.
May it please the court. The relief which the relators are asking you to give in this case is truly extraordinary. They're asking you to hold a lawsuit filed under the Declaratory Judgment Act, which seeks no injunctive relief at all, has injunctive relief as its sole and primary purpose. They're further requesting what really amounts to a de novo review by this court on venue on declaratory judgments. There's not a line in Forward's 30-minute petition, which is our live pleading, that even mentions injunctive relief, except in our prayer, we ask for such other further relief, including injunctive relief, as may be necessary to effectuate our declaratory judgments.
That's not true, Mr. Kelly. You also use the word irreparable harm, that irreparable harm is imminent, and you want to preserve the status quo.
Well, Your Honor, I don't mention the word injunction.
But you use
the term irreparable harm twice because we're trying to show that the Declaratory Judgment Act is ripe and mature for adjudication. But it's not used in an injunctive sense. It was used in the declaratory judgment sense.
This is language typically used on injunctions.
And we're trying, pardon?
This is language typically used when you're...
But, Your Honor, in this case, they were used to support the rightness of the declaratory judgment action. They weren't used for injunctive relief. They were used in descriptive terms trying to show we had a mature declaratory judgment.
Mr. Kelly, I'm following up on Judge Hanginson's question. Assume you get all the relief you pray for.
Right.
Then I'm assuming you expect Dallas to comply with the order.
We do.
Which results in what?
Which wouldn't require any further action by us.
I'm just asking, assuming that Dallas would obey the trial court order, which would make Dallas do what or not do what?
Well, it depends on the declaration, Your Honor, but the declaration we're asking for is that Dallas has proprietary power reserved under the Airline Deregulation Act and Ride Amendment to impose reasonable restrictions to Love Field, including the existing perimeter rule of Love Field, which restricts interstate traffic to Texas before adjacent states.
So if I, as a city council person, walked in after this judgment's been entered, and I walk into a city council and say, you know, I think we ought to permit interstate traffic from Love Field, what happens? And the city council says, okay, we're going to discuss this.
Well, Your Honor,
if
they refuse to abide by the declaratory relief, which the court declares, if it's upheld by this court on appeal, then we would have the right to go in like any other judgment and ask to be enforced, either by ancillary injunctive relief, the damages, or a specific performance.
And enforced in what court?
Well, enforced in the court, I guess in Fort Worth.
Okay, so, but since that's now for an injunction, I'm assuming you would agree that the mandatory venue requires it to be transferred to Dallas.
No, that's ancillary. That's an ancillary relief. I mean, that's an ancillary to our declaratory judgment relief. We are certainly entitled to go in any judgment and get it enforced if the other side refuses to comply with it. That would be totally ancillary. We'd be trying to, an ancillary relief to get our declaratory judgment enforced if we have to do it.
Okay. So
you shouldn't have to do it. That's
what other relief? Let's assume that you get complete relief. in under this cause of action, just this deck action, you get complete relief. What relief do you get other than relief that you would ultimately have the authority to have enforced by injunction?
We get declarations, Your Honor. It's what a declaratory judgment act. That's what gives us the right to ask for. We ask for affirmative and negative declarations, which you're asking for, and that's fairly good.
Results in what? Results in
results. What we're trying for, we're only requesting what it believes the contract declares.
Well, doesn't it go beyond a declaration and request coercive?
No, ma'am,
relief
it does not.
In terms of requiring Dallas to do something or to stop doing something.
No, ma'am,
doesn't
it does not.
Isn't it beyond just a declaration of rights? Why not?
Well, in the first place, the difference between mandatory and injunctions and declaratory judgments, one is mandatory and one is permissive. We can't hold Dallas in contempt if they don't abide by the declaratory judgments. We'd have to have some further proceeding to enforce it if they refuse to abide by it. But the mere fact we get a declaration doesn't make it enforceable. It takes some further action to get it enforced if we had to enforce it. But just because we get a declaratory judgment doesn't mean that that's automatically enforced against Dallas. It's like you pointed out a while ago, we'd have to take further action to do it.
But the point of fact, you're trying to get an injunction against Continental.
Your Honor, that was ancillary. That happened 6 months after the lawsuit was filed. They came in here after we filed the lawsuit, and they come in and go to Dallas, and they announce they're going to fly to Cleveland, Ohio, Love Field, beginning July the 1st. They filed their own declaratory judgment action at Dallas in federal court, asking the same time relief we're asking for in Fort Worth. And we had to join them as a party and make them a party because they destroyed the subject matter of our lawsuit. That was an ancillary injunction suit. Now,
What other relief, other than injunctive relief, are you asking for against Continental or Legend?
Ma'am, they're parties affected by declaratory judgments. If we succeed in getting the court to issue these declaratory judgments, Continental will be affected by those declaratory judgments because one of the declarations we ask for is for Dallas to impose restrictions at Love Field to limit interstate traffic support
on the
states.
That's relief against Dallas. What relief are you asking for against Continental and Legend?
Continental.
In this lawsuit?
We're asking for no direct relief against Continental. We don't have to, Judge. Always under the Declaratory Judgment Act. The Declaratory Judgment Act, your case in Board of Water Engineers versus San Antonio, we don't have to ask for direct relief against Continental to make our Declaratory Judgments enforceable against them. If our Declaratory Judgment Act itself says it'll be like a final judgment. They're bound by a declaratory judgment. We don't have to have a direct case against them to enforce our declaratory judgment.
What contract or written agreement do you have with Continental or Legend that you're seeking declaratory relief?
We have a municipal ordinance, which Dallas and Fort Worth agreed and signed in 1968 to build the DFW airport and to prohibit competition with that airport and to promote the development of that airport and to not use our owned airport for these two cities to compete with the FDA. That's our contract. That's the municipal ordinance we filed as declaratory judgment action.
Could you have brought a declaratory judgment action just directly against Continental without joining the city of Dallas?
We didn't join Continental originally, Your Honor. We didn't need to join them because they weren't trying to alter the status quo in Love Field.
That's not my question. Could you bring a declaratory judgment action solely against Continental without joining the city of Dallas?
Well, no. Our lawsuit is against the city of Dallas. That's who we have a contract with. But we had to bring in after Continental jumped in the lawsuit 6 months after. I guess Continental could come in here after we tried the case, and they announced they're going to fly to Cleveland, Ohio, and then I guess we'd have to transfer a venue to Houston under their theory.
Would you respond to Ms. Whitaker's argument that in fact we should be looking at sections 15.004 and 005 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code that if venue is mandatory as to one defendant with respect to, in this instance, getting injunctive relief, would that then govern?
Your Honor, this whole
case with respect to multiple defendants?
The whole question that all the cases hold, in this court is forever held, if the primary purpose of our lawsuit is for injunctive relief, then it's governed by the mandatory venue statute. But Lord, how can anybody look at our pleadings? How can a trial court even grant an injunction on our current pleadings? Our pleadings don't even plead a good case for injunction relief right now. The trial court couldn't even grant an injunction right now. How can anyone say that our pleadings right now are primarily for injunctive relief? I mean,
Ms. Whitaker is obviously posing a different question than you are, which is often that happens. The parties look at the question differently. Can you just for a minute respond to her argument, though, specifically that if we look to 15.004 and 005, then the effect of the mandatory venue provision in a case involving multiple defendants dictates?
Well, the only injunction in this case, Your Honor, the only injunction that's been granted by the court in this case is an ancillary injunction granted by Judge McCoy to prohibit Connell Airlines from flying from Dallas to Cleveland, Ohio.
So under 15.004 and 005, why doesn't the request for injunctive relief as to one of the defendants then invoke mandatory venue as to all the defendants?
Well, if Your Honor simply doesn't do it, if that were the case, then anybody, you file a suit for declaratory judgment. The declaratory judgment act says you must join the parties who are affected by the declaration. If that were the case, then every time you file a suit under the general venue statute, declaratory judgment, and a third party intervened in a lawsuit and you had to join them, that third party could come in and control venue. That just doesn't make any sense, Your Honor. You'd have third parties who have to be named under the declaratory judgment act, and they would be the ones controlling venue in the case. And that's a complete response there for our argument.
Ms. Kelly, how do you respond to Ms. Whitaker's argument if there's a... I own a house, and I'm being foreclosed on, and I get the notice that it's going to be foreclosed on, and I go to court, and I ask for a declaratory judgment to declare my rights, and the rights I want to declare, I guess I got to reverse this, I'm the mortgage company, and I want to foreclose. So I go, and I want to have my rights declared before the court. Now, I don't ask for an injunction. I don't want to stop the foreclosure. I don't want to do any of that. I just want to have my rights declared that there won't be a foreclosure. Just declare my rights that there's not going to be a foreclosure here and not ask for an injunction. Does that avoid the mandatory venue?
Every case that they've cited in their brief, every single one of them, without exception, has basic injunctive relief as the relief requested. They don't cite you a single case, even touch top side or bottom of this case. Every case they cite asks for basic injunctive relief. The foreclosure cases, they're asking for permanent injunctive relief. Practically every case they cite to ask for permanent injunctive relief. No such relief is requested in this case.
But the hypothetical that was set up, my hypothetical is I don't ask for injunctive relief. I simply want to declare the rights that once that's declared, in effect we'll say that foreclosure is not available to you.
Well, if the primary purpose of the lawsuit is to have a contract declared or have an instrument declared, Your Honor, declaratory judgment suit, if the primary purpose of that lawsuit is to enjoin a foreclosure sale, which is the case she's talking about, it's an injunction case. So we don't have anything like that in this case. Now, they point to this language Judge Gonzalez mentioned in our contract about status quo and irreparable harm. We only mention that in connection with our trying to make our declaratory judgment relief mature and effective. The status quo we talk about is the status quo at Love Field. We're trying to do with this lawsuit is maintain the status quo at Love Field. We're not trying to close Love Field down. Two federal judges have already looked at our pleadings and determined that question. We're not trying to close Love Field down, but we are trying to maintain the status quo. Dallas and Fort Worth entered into 1968 in this bond agreement. And we agreed we would fill that airport, and we agreed that we wouldn't use these Love Field and Greater Southwest to compete with that airport so it could be built and kept thriving, and we've succeeded. And all we're asking Dallas to do in this case, we're not trying to micromanage Love Field.
Wouldn't Love Field be thriving anymore if Continental were to fly out from there to Cleveland? Seems like
it.
Love Field would be thriving even more.
Well, Your Honor, the problem is, once you start that
you're
process,
afraid of the effect. You're afraid of the effect it would have on Dallas.
Look what happened. American Airlines started flying intrastate in Texas last week from Dallas to Austin. Four of those flights came to DFW. And the more you put over there, the more flights going to come out of DFW. The bond note, Fort Worth is on billions of dollars worth of those bonds as is Dallas. We're just asking Dallas to keep its end of the deal. It's part of the bargain. We've done it. They should do it too, and that's what our lawsuit's all about.
One last question, and I think your time is about up. Do you share opposing counsel's view that venue may be outcome determinative?
Well, Your Honor, no. I think Fort Worth is just a final place to try lawsuits. Dallas or Houston. I think they can get just as good a fair trial over there as they can anywhere in the state. We're not some maverick county in South Texas, Your Honor. We're a pretty decent place over there, and the judges over there are good judges. I've got one more thing. I'll take it off Mr. Powell's time.
All right.
Your Honor, I know the court knows the consequences of this court injecting itself in the venue in this case at this late date. This case is a year old. We've had an enormous amount of activity in this case already. And we would hope the court would see, as I know it will see, that if you change venue at this late stage of this case, it's going to delay this case, and it's going to be more than delay the case. It's going to double the expense. We have fought hard, Fort Worth has, to keep this case in the state court system where we believe it belongs, because this is basically a contract dispute between these two cities. And we want this court to have the final say, but on the merits, and not on some interlocutory matter like venue. Thank you.
If it pleases the court, I'm Mike Powell, and I'm representing American Airlines. I would first like to address Justice Owen's questions about the argument that Legend and Continental make that they are not parties to the city's contract or bond ordinance, therefore Fort Worth really can't seek a declaratory judgment against them. And taking it one step further, Continental and Legend argue that since they are not seeking anything except a declaratory judgment, or as they put it in their brief, their reply brief most recently, they're not seeking any relief against them, they must ipso facto be seeking an injunction, which I don't understand how that logically falls. But let me deal with that argument in a couple of ways. I think both of the propositions on which that argument is based are wrong. The first issue is that the test for whether they are proper parties to a declaratory judgment action is not a privity test. The test is found in the statute, in the Declaratory Judgment Statute, Section 37.006. And the test is whether they claim or have an interest that would be affected by the declaration. That's the test that must be met before they are proper parties to a declaratory judgment action. And they clearly meet that test. If the court declares that the contract and the municipal ordinance remain valid, and that under the contract and the ordinance, Dallas is obligated to restrict interstate traffic at Love Field, then Continental and Legend are clearly affected by that declaration, even though they're not parties to the contract and they're not parties to the municipal ordinance.
Well, suppose Dallas breaches the contract and allows Continental to do it. What authority does Fort Worth have to sue Continental to enjoin them?
Let me talk about it in two ways. Let's talk about first temporary injunction, which is what is at issue here. And I'm surprised to hear that...
Well, I'm not sure it's at issue here. I mean, a temporary injunction has to be based on something.
Well,
and the something is that Continental, more than likely, is not, by some claim, have authority to fly out of Love Field that Fort Worth is asserting. And so I'm looking for the basis of that.
The basis of the temporary injunction was that all three governmental entities in this case, the Dallas-Fort Worth Air Force Board, Fort Worth, and Dallas, joined in requests for temporary injunctions against Continental and Continental Express to preserve the situation at Love Field, pending this case until a decision can be made on whether there is federal preemption and whether these covenants, these 1968 contracts and municipal ordinances, bar exactly what Continental is going to do. Dallas has said
predicated on the notion that you will get an injunction against the city prohibiting flights out of Love Field.
No, we're not. I don't think that's at all correct, Justice Enoch. I think it's predicated on the notion that once the court declares what Dallas's obligations are under its own contract, we're not trying to impose any obligations that are not already agreed to in the contract. We're simply asking the court to declare what those obligations are that Dallas agreed to in the contract and in the ordinance. Once the court declares what Dallas's rights are, and very importantly, once the court declares whether those rights and obligations are preempted by federal law, which is the defense in the case, that is the 900-pound gorilla defense in the case, then we think Dallas will do right. Dallas has said it will do right. And at that point in time, Dallas will do what it has done for the past 20 years. It will impose controls on Love Field and keep it to be within what it agreed it would do. And it does that in a number of ways. It does that through lease agreements where it reserves the right to do these things. And we don't really, I mean, I don't know exactly how Dallas will go about enforcing its obligations that it freely undertook in the contract and the ordinance once those obligations are declared. But it has many ways to do that, and it's not really up to Fort Worth to tell Dallas how to do it. If Dallas refuses to do it, then we've got another problem. That's a problem down the road, but nobody really foresees that problem. I mean, Dallas has said, we're between a rock and a hard spot. This is Dallas's position. We're between a rock and a hard spot. We know we've got a contract with Fort Worth. We have a joint venture with Fort Worth. We have fiduciary duties to Fort Worth. We know we have an ordinance that both of us signed, and it's pretty clear about what we agreed to do. But we have people telling us that the federal government has come in here and preempted all that, and we can't enforce that anymore. We just want to know, can we or can we not? That's Dallas's at bottom position. So I think this is a perfect declaratory judgment case.
If that was the case, Dallas would have filed a suit instead of Fort Worth for declaratory judgment.
Dallas did file a suit in federal court in Dallas. Well, asking the same question. Dallas did do that. I mean, there's no question Fort Worth filed first.
But the question is, can Fort Worth bring a suit against Dallas in Fort Worth to require Dallas to do that?
Right. And the only question here is whether there's a mandatory venue provision that requires the case to be transferred out of Fort Worth. And I think the question that you asked, Justice Hankinson, I think the answer is this. You look at that first section, 15.004, and it says in a suit in which there is a mandatory venue provision, you have to answer the question as to whether there's a mandatory venue provision. The only one that's at issue is 65.023A, which is the injunction statute. And so you look to that statute to see whether it applies. And that's what this case is about. Does 65.023A apply to this lawsuit? And we say it doesn't because that statute, which has been on the books of the state for 100 years or more, has been construed by this court and by other courts to say that it applies. It's over in the section of the Civil Practices and Remedies Code to talk about injunction suits. And the courts have said, this court has said in the Ex Parte Coffee case, the Brown Television case, and a number of other cases, the Weather case, that statute applies only when the principal and primary purpose of the suit, as determined from the pleadings of the plaintiff, is to seek an injunction, a permanent injunction. Lots of cases say it has nothing to do with preliminary injunctions, temporary injunctions. The purpose of the suit, and the cases are legion, and that has not been changed here. You look through this statute to see if a mandatory venue statute applies, and then you go there and look at that. But back to the issue of the suit against Continental.
Let me just ask you really quickly. Did I hear you answer Justice Enoch's question a minute ago, say there's really no dispute between Dallas and Fort Worth over what the agreement and the ordinances require of both cities and the airport board?
I think the airport board is sort of in between the two cities.
How about did I hear you say it's between the two cities? There's really no dispute as to what the agreement means or
there
what
the
rights and obligations are underneath it?
No, there is a dispute. There's a dispute as to whether it remains effective, which is a specific question that the Declaratory Judgment Act
which
gives
goes
you the
to
power.
Federal preemption question.
That goes to federal preemption. Then there is another question about the language of the bond ordinance covenants, as to what is meant in there by some language about if legally permissible and what are reasonable steps and what does phase out mean. There are some questions that one would have to construed.
And the cities are in disagreement over what those terms mean?
Actually, I think we probably are, but we haven't gotten to that because the big defense, I mean the defense that the city of Dallas has made and the defense that the airlines, Legend and Continental, have made is federal preemption. I mean, right now their argument is all of that's totally irrelevant because all this has been preempted. And they filed lawsuits in Dallas to try to get that declared. They've raised all that as a defense in this case, and I think that is before this court.
Okay.
before the trial court at this point in time, the question of federal preemption.
What is the status of things with Continental?
What is the status? Right now, Your Honor, there are motions for summary judgment on that point pending. Several of the courts have established a schedule, and one of the questions, the outcome determinative question. I mean, I think most of the questions in this case, especially from the defendant's point of view, are questions of law, questions of federal preemption.
And there's an outstanding injunction against Continental?
Temporary injunction pending against Continental. Two, actually. One in favor of the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport Board, which was joined in by Dallas, and the other one in favor of Fort Worth. Those are on appeal to the Court of Appeals in Fort Worth. I haven't seen the briefs yet. The briefs are due from the appellants very quickly. I suspect the point of error number one will be that the trial judge erred in doing this because it was preempted by federal law. So that will be evolving in the Court of Appeals fairly quickly. I mean, it's all records been filed, about 20 days of run. And then in the trial court, the trial judge some time ago set a schedule, and he said anybody who wants to file a motion for summary judgment on some of these dispositive legal issues should do so by some date last month. And I know responses are due the 18th of this month. And so things are moving along orderly, and a lot of work has been done in that proceeding. But it seems to me that, I mean, the gist of all that is everything that's pending before that court, by the pleadings or by what's really going on there, is a pure, let's declare contracts, the effectiveness of contracts, let's declare the effectiveness of this municipal ordinance and decide what the meaning of it is and what it requires.
Mr. Powell, let me ask you that, and as I understand the argument of the petitioners, they say, if you say mandatory venue does not apply to this declaratory judgment action, then mandatory venue would never apply to any cause of action where the artful drafter simply wants a declaration of rights that everybody knows ultimately results in an injunction, as long as they carefully avoid the word injunction. How could the court here declare that mandatory venue does not apply in the state of these facts where, taking your facts the way you understand this case to be, and ever have it apply again, as long as a person says, hey, I'm not enjoying that airplane from flying out of that field, I'm simply wanting a declaration of a contract over here that prohibits that airplane from flying out of that field.
Let me ask you a question in two ways. First, I'll flip it around, and then I'll get back to it. But first, if you were to hold that this case right here is an injunction suit within 65.03A.
No, I want to say, if we hold today that this case is not an injunction suit such that mandatory venue does not apply, how does it ever apply in a circumstance where a party simply says, all I want you to do is declare the rights under this contract that we all know will ultimately result in prohibiting a party from doing something?
The party, if that declaratory judgment is entered, the order is, just like we've requested on pages or Fort Worth requested on 24 and 25 here, a declaration that the contract and agreement that party signed requires that party to do this or forbids that party from doing that. That is a declaratory judgment. And I would agree with you that those kinds of cases in which you ask for that do not fit within 65.023A. If the legislature wants to enact a mandatory venue statute for declaratory judgments, construing contracts and construing instruments of various kinds, then they can do so. But they have not done so.
But what do you do with the case where the debtor asks for declaratory judgment? He doesn't owe the debt, and the next day he applies for a temporary injunction against the foreclosure.
Well, I think you have a case. Let's assume you could start a year before, for example. He could ask for that declaratory judgment.
Right. Just does it one day after declaratory judgment application for a temporary injunction.
I think all he's asking for is a declaratory judgment in his case, and then he seeks a preliminary injunction, which I do not think triggers 65.023A. If he then has to get a permanent injunction to prohibit the lender from foreclosing on the property, can get a temporary injunction. There are a lot of cases like that that we've cited in our briefs. That doesn't trigger 65.0238. But if you then seek, okay, I've got a declaratory judgment that I don't owe the debt, but the lender is still after me, and he's going to do something, and I need him permanently enjoined, then I think you're in 65.0238.
But maybe the lender will do it. The lender will follow the law. All I have to do is declare this, and the lender will not foreclose.
I mean, that isn't that good? I mean, I think
so,
that's what this court said in Lever, that we should plead in anticipation of. And I think there's a great quote, we put it in our brief, from the Supreme Court of the United States in the Steffel versus Thompson case, which was a case sort of like this. They were questioning whether a federal court could issue a declaratory judgment about a state statute when it could not issue an injunction about the state statute. And they said, yes, they can. And they said that while it says, what is clear, however, that even though a declaratory judgment has the force and effect of a final judgment, it is a much milder form of relief than an injunction. Though it may be persuasive, it is not ultimately coercive. Noncompliance with it may be inappropriate, but it is not contempt. And we're right there. That's all we've got. There's no mandatory venue statute for that type of thing. And this court, it seems to me, is faced with the question, if you decide that that type of thing right there triggers 65.0238, then you can't ever have a declaratory judgment that's not an injunction suit under that statute, and that's not what the legislature said. Thank you very much. We request that the court deny the writ of mandamus.
Thank you, counsel.
Good afternoon, may I please the court, Randy Wilson from Continental Airlines. Let me expand for just a moment on Justice Eve's question about foreclosure and take another similar example. What's the classic injunctive action that trial courts are faced with? Covenant not to compete cases. Lawyer comes in, seeks an injunction to prohibit an employee, a former employee, from competing against him. Suppose he does not want to sue that employee where he lives, but rather wants to sue him in his county. Doesn't want to sue him over there where he lives, but wants to sue him in his county. How does he do that? Your Honor, I seek a declaratory judgment declaring that he is precluded from competing against me. I seek a declaration that he must abide by his contract. I seek a declaration that requires him not to compete against me. And I'm not seeking an injunction because I'm going to presume that he... And if he subsequently disobeys my declaratory judgment, then I will seek ancillary relief to enforce my declaration. Anybody can recast anything as a declaratory judgment. It can always be done. So we're faced with a conflict. The conflict then is, how do we resolve a venue provision, a permissive venue provision for a declaratory judgment, with a mandatory venue provision for an injunction if somebody artfully pleads? The legislature resolved that in 15.004, and it said if there is a mandatory venue provision, then the permissive must yield to the mandatory. In the case of Continental, Continental finds itself in yet even a stronger position. Continental had no contract. Continental is not a party to the contract they are seeking a declaration of. Continental was brought into the suit subsequently, and Legend was brought into the suit at the very beginning of the case, and Legend is in the same position as Continental. Being not a party to the contract, Legend and Continental were brought into this suit seeking purely and only, they can seek, the only relief that can be sought against those parties would be an injunction.
Wasn't that defensive action after you fought a lawsuit in federal court?
Well, in Legend's case, it would not be. Legend was sued from the very beginning of the case
But it is correct as to Continental.
Continental was sued. The sequence of events were, after we announced we were going to commence flying to Cleveland, we filed our declaration seeking that we had the right to do something. Not a coercive claim. We weren't seeking to coerce anybody to do something. Not an injunction, just a declaration of our rights. Then,
rights under what?
Rights under the Wright Amendment and the Shelby Amendment, federal law that seemed, at least to us, to give us the right to be able to do exactly what we wanted to do.
And what parties precisely did you sue?
We sued DFW, City of Fort Worth, City of Dallas, we sued everybody that had anything to do.
Why is that not just the opposite side of the same coin that they are dealing with?
Because ours is seeking a declaration of our rights, not seeking to compel anybody to do anything. That is, I want a declaration that I can do this.
And they want a declaration that you can't do it.
A little more than that, Justice Abbott. Their declaration. I want a declaration that Dallas is prohibited from doing something.
By contract and ordinance.
Correct. I want a declaration that Dallas is obliged to do these things.
By contract and ordinance.
Correct. They are seeking a declaration to compel. They are compel a third party to do something. They are seeking a declaration a third party must do something. They are seeking a declaration a third party cannot do something. That is, when somebody does that, when somebody seeks a declaration to compel or to prohibit, it is coercive. And at that point, a declaratory judgment becomes an injunctive action, and it therefore triggers the mandatory venue provision. On the other hand, if you seek a classic declaratory judgment, and the classic one would be an insurance company, please give me a declaration of whether I have a duty to defend this case. Do I have to defend it? I'm not seeking to compel anybody to do something. I just want a declaration of my rights. I'm not seeking any order making them do something or prohibiting them from doing something. That would be a declaratory judgment action, pure and simple. But we now have this conflict here of can you recraft something in order to avoid the mandatory venue provisions? We submit you should not be able to. That would write that provision out. And the provision's simple statutory construction is that a statute must be construed in a way so that it makes sense.
If they had not sought a temporary injunction and were simply asking for the declaration of lock rights and you were flying today, would your argument be the same?
Yes. The argument would be the same because from the very beginning, for two reasons. One, from the very beginning, the relief sought against Dallas, we submit, is injunctive. Just a fox cast in different clothing. But second, when we were brought into it, as the Fort Worth Court of Appeals and its mandamus points out, they seek no relief against us. Therefore, the cases they cite, the old plea of privilege cases, they set up the proposition that you must look to see what the dominant relief is by virtue of the relief being sought. That's what the cases have all said. Look at the relief, see what relief they're seeking, and therefore see what the dominant relief is. Now I submit that under the new statute, 15.004, you no longer need to do that. So long as there is injunctive relief, the statute is very clear. It doesn't require this court or the trial court to look and go into the minds of what the dominant relief is or isn't relief. It just says if it's mandatory, mandatory wins. But even under their cases...
Mr. Wilson, the way the pleadings are postured right now, if the case ended tomorrow, the trial court ruled on the summary judgment, and Fort Worth won, you wouldn't have an injunction issuing out of the court. You would have a judgment reciting the declaratory relief they request. They would not approve irreparable harm and all the requirements of a permanent injunction, correct?
That's correct.
So under those circumstances, why doesn't their failure to specifically ask that a permanent injunction be entered control whether or not this is an action for a writ of injunction?
Because they seek mandatory relief. They seek... It's a twofold problem. One, they try to avoid the venue. The second, they try to avoid a lot of the irreparable injury requirements that are required in order to get an injunction. They seek a compulsion. They seek an order. Dallas, a declaration. Dallas is prohibited. A declaration that Dallas is obliged to do these things. That's compulsion. And that's, no matter how you cast it, it's still injunctive.
Mr. Wilson, let me reverse the issue. I see the problem of careful crafting gets away from the injunction issue and not the mandatory venue, but the reverse also applies. Continental Airlines comes in and says, I just want a declaration of my rights, and suppose Dallas comes in. You know, this is down in Houston, and Continental says, I want a declaration of my rights. Dallas comes in and says, wait a minute. We have some contractual obligations here. We think we have the right under our leasing of those gates to determine where Continental is going to fly. So this really is, in effect, an injunction. The declaration of their rights really is a results in enjoining the Dallas from exercising its rights under the lease. Therefore, it's an injunction, mandatory venue in Dallas. How come that argument isn't just as applicable when I want to declare my rights as opposed to Fort Worth wanting to declare its rights vis-a-vis Dallas?
Understood. Actually, it turns out in your hypothetical, both the mandatory and the permissive rules would both send it to Dallas in that case. But I understand your question. The test ought to be, Your Honor, is action being sought to compel a third party to do something, a declaration to compel, or a declaration to prohibit. If I am seeking a declaration to compel or a declaration that they are prohibited, then that is still a wolf in a sheep's clothing. It's an injunction. The hypothetical you pose, I would not be seeking a compulsion. Unless it depends on what the declaration is. If I sought a declaration saying Dallas would be compelled to let us fly, that's an injunction. I could call it an injunction. I seek an injunction that Dallas must order us to fly. It depends on what you ask for. It depends on how pervasive you want to be and how broad in your relief you want to be.
Under these circumstances, how much deference is the trial court's decision on a standing matter on Title 6?
Under the mandamus rules, it's whether it's an erroneous conclusion of law.
Dealing with
a
de novo standard of review here?
Yes, sir.
Is it true that Dallas joined in the request for injunctive relief against Continental?
They did. They filed no papers to it. What happened at the trial court was Dallas, after the day of the trial, at the day of the temporary injunction, indicated, stood up and said that, and I can't remember whether they said they had no opposition to it or whether they were in favor of it. And that's essentially what they said.
Is that a significance?
I don't believe so, because whether Dallas seeks it or doesn't seek it, I mean, the venue rules clearly provide that a party, once a venue motion is overruled, at any time, a party can still go ahead and seek relief and still do things, and you're still entitled, the party is still required to do what it has to do in order to defend itself. It's not a jurisdictional gotcha. You can still do things. You can still file motions to compel, et cetera.
Would you agree that most of the matters to be decided in this case are matters of law as opposed to matters of fact?
Primarily, but not exclusively, Justice Abbott. There are, to be sure, matters of law. The federal preemption, of course, isn't part of the name. There are also matters of fact. There is, for example, in Continental's case, they are attempting, the City of Fort Worth and DFW is attempting to impose a contract that Continental Airlines signed on Continental Express on the basis of alter ego. And so a tremendous amount of the temporary injunction hearing, the four-day hearing in Fort Worth in early July, evolved around single enterprise industry alter ego as to whether Continental Express was an alter ego of Continental Airlines and therefore bound by a use agreement signed with the DFW Air Force. A clear question of that. So there are mixed questions.
Would you agree that the statute does not cover temporary injunctions, generally speaking? If that's all, you're just seeking a status quo injunction while the suit can be litigated?
That appears to be what it says. But the relief, there is no relief that they can seek against us that is anything but injunctive. At the end of the day, no relief. And that's what the Fort Worth Court of Appeals said. There is no relief they're seeking against us. All that relief is injunctive relief.
Have they, as a practical matter, gotten all the relief they need to get against you?
Well, of course not. No, because at the end of the day, Continental Airlines still would very much like to fly.
But if they win against, if they just pursue their claims against Dallas and are successful, do they need any further relief against Continental?
That would depend upon what Dallas did at that point, whether to what extent Dallas then would honor the declaratory judgment. And the problem is you've got folded on top of the Department of Justice, Department of Transportation proceeding. The DOT has now weighed in, and they're in the process of interpreting these very same statutes. And there's a bit of a race going on here because the DOT wants to issue, promulgate their rules as to who can fly in and out of Dallas-Fort Worth, and the Fort Worth is trying to speed up the Fort Worth suit and slow down the DOT suit. There's a lot of vying going on, and so do you have a chance
this whole proceeding could become moot?
Well, it depends on what effect you give to the DOT proceedings, whether the DOT action is preclusive and whether it's covered by primary jurisdiction doctrine. And that, frankly, is an issue that Legend has filed a motion in the trial court, which will be heard on this Friday. asking that the Fort Worth suit be abated on the primary jurisdiction ground. The DOT has weighed in, and they're in the next 3 weeks to, or actually next 6 weeks, going to issue a ruling that says what the rights are to fly in and out of Love Field. Meanwhile, the Fort Worth judge has indicated he's going to hold a summary judgment hearing on October 1. So things are moving at a rather rapid pace.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
That concludes the argument and the final clauses for today, and everything we've heard today will be submitted on briefs and oral arguments. The marshal will adjourn the court.
All rise.